Partiality has no place in this judgment. Just remember the words of prophecy. I say, children, run, come, the truth and rise. That's what I'm about. You know the truth and rise. Teach it to the...
CKUP
Radio.
Radio.
Sound wave in the air.
CKUP.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUP.
It's time to take sampling to a whole new level. Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal. Welcome to West Indian Rhythms. My name is Howard Carr. And the co-host of the show,
Chief Sanka.
And along with the rest of the crew,
DJ
Nicholas. Special guest, DJ. With the news,
Brian Amplified.
Welcome to West Indian Rhythms. On CKUT 90.3 FM, People's Station.
From Africa,
I must live from a land so far. I was caught and I was brought here from Africa.
Well, it was licks like fire from the white slave master. Every day I'd done on my knees, weeks and weeks before we crossed the seas to reach in the West Indies. And then they made me work. Oh yes, I work.
A good lot of pay.
I toil and toil and toil and toil so hard
each day.
I'm dying. Yeah, I'm crying. English slave master standing there with the gun.
Oh, I know he going to shoot to kill.
So I stay and I pray, but I'm planning still. I study night and day how to break away. I got to make a brilliant escape. But every time I think about the whip and them dogs, my body does start to shake.
Because they made me work. Oh yes, I work. A good lot of pay.
was much to say. And I hope that the boss would listen to me someday. Although he knew my request was small, it was the sting of the whip there to answer me when I called. We had to chant and sing to express our feeling to that wicked and cruel man. That was the only medicine to make him listen. And his calypso began. Oh, when they make you work, oh Lord, you work. Good Lord, no pay. And then you toil and toil and toil and toil so hard each day. I am dying. Yeah. One day, somebody said, free the bloody slaves. I was then put out on the street. I got no food, I got no clothes, got no place to sleep. I had no education, no particular ambition. This I cannot conceive. Forgot my native culture, I say I live like a vulture. From the white boss I had to steal. He made me work, oh yes I work.
Oh Lord, no pay, yeah, 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 yeah. I toil and toil and I toil and toil so hard each day. I'm dying, oh, yeah, yeah. I'm crying.
So I face the final curtain. My friend, now let me say this clear. I'm gonna state my case, of which I am certain. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this. May I say I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I thought I had to do, and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, yeah. much more than this. I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I can chew. And I've cried. I had my fill. I even had my share of losing. And now as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And not in a shy way, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man, tell me, what has he got, if not himself? Say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took all the blows and did it
loud. I hear you have cancer. I hear you have yellow fever. Something in the bladder. With a double dose of leukemia. I stand up in a corner listening. Before for that, who they talking about? A newspaper boy that are just it. Paper. Read all about it. Paper.
Who killed Sparrow? Nobody knows.
But Sparrow dead, he did romance.
Sparrow dead,
a flag in the hand.
Sparrow dead,
he back in belly. And she telling everybody, Sparrow dead.
Who killed Sparrow? Nobody knows.
Move on. According to Vicky, he was always looking sickly. So he went to England for a belly transplant operation. The woman is full of it. She will walk over here one day. Another newsbunker says, she know, the devil take his soul for Calypso. Paper, paper. Look in here. Read all about it.
Who killed his Sparrow? Nobody knows.
Sparrow dead.
See this woman.
Sparrow dead.
A flag in the hand.
Sparrow dead.
If you see a woman, have something to look at you, then simply to confess. Depicted it to when she confessed. People were the miserable in gold. Paradise landing piano. This time the evening, you take it out with another headline by Chester Maron. Paper, paper.
Who killed the Sparrow? Nobody knows.
Sparrow dead.
Sparrow dead.
Who killed the Sparrow?
Nobody knows.
to everyone there listening to me. I am Slinger D. DeFrancisco. I want to set the record straight. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm alive and well, as strong as ever and feeling good. And anyone wanting to know, I talk to my fans and I tell them, yes, yes, I am the supreme serenading calypso king in the world, the mighty sparrow. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm ready for action. So, rumors about my passing is completely false. And people who are saying that should be ashamed of themselves, but I know nowadays those who are doing that don't have no shame. I don't think that they really want to hurt me, but they're listening to idle gossip, and next thing you know, they get carried away. So, folks, if you're listening good, don't take them on. It's good to know they're concerned. But, folks, you're listening to the Supreme Serenita, Dr. Cecilia Francisco. You know what I'm talking about? Keep the action going. So we should open some champagne and celebrate, you know? Sparrow, boy!
Ah, boy.
Sing a song on that, buddy. Yabba dabba doo. Oh, yeah.
That's my man.
Thank you, thank you.
The mighty Sparrow, alive Bye-bye. And well. And as he says, you need to stop doing what you're doing. For those of you who are trying to get a little fame for whatever it is, I took you through memory lane with the mighty Sparrow. I had the pleasure of meeting this gentleman in the 67, to be exact, when we opened for the mighty Sparrow and the Troubadours at a club called Brown Jug in Ochuria, Scuppermans of Byron Lee and his Dragonaires. We did that, and it followed up for two more years until I left Jamaica to come to Canada. I've known him, and I'm just fed up, really fed up. I was coming on this evening in a nice, sexy, romantic way, you know. I had all my plans and all that, but I'm just fed up, you know. Between Sparrow dead, and they want to condemn my prime minister, Mr. Trudeau, because he brought in the act. You know, everything. I mean, what is it that do they want in this country? This is a beautiful country, and this is why I chose to live here. I had my choice of two other countries, the good old God Save the Queen and the other one, I won't say. And I chose this country because of the fact that I love this country. And I'm jumping from one thing to the other. But leave Sparrow alone. Sparrow is alive. As a matter of fact, as soon as this thing done too. I'm not saying it too quick, but we hope the mighty Sparrow will be here. Well, I got a joke off of Sparrow this weekend. Yesterday, I had to laugh. Sparrow was talking to a friend of his around 7 p.m. last night. And the friend said to him, "Sparrow, how come you sound so tired?" Sparrow said, "Boy, my phone has not stopped ringing. All day yesterday, all day, all night last night." So his friend said to him, "So why are you answering the phone? Just don't answer the phone, man." Sparrow said, "Me answer the phone. They all going to say me really dead for true." But that's Sparrow. Greatest sense of humor you'll ever find. One of the beautiful things that I enjoyed with him, working with him in Ochirios, 90% of the people in the club were all tourists. In those days, tourists roamed the streets. They would walk and they'd go to this club, that club, and what have you. And he would sit there and he would make a song. complimenting the ladies, and they, I up till this day, I have never seen anybody who did it the way he done it, and that's why I played my way, and all that. Okay, so yeah, the versatility of this guy is unbelievable. I went, I ready to lose him yet. So I'm not shut up. Let me talk Jamaica. And I'm not done with it. Like most because I'm not done with it, sir. All right? You know, and if you want to be popular, go dance on a pole, no man, downtown somewhere. You know, just leave the man name alone. When he's dead, everybody will know. Like everybody, because we all have to pass through that anyhow. Right? So please. In a nice, polite way so that my Canadian listeners can understand, please do not chastise this man's name and speak all kind of things. Now, back to me on the politics a little bit. I have to address this because I love Trudeau. I love his dad. You know, I grew up with his dad, and he's one of the reasons why we came to this country, because He and Michael Manley were great friends, you know. I know the Canada Emergency Act brought in by Justin Trudeau is that controversial, with some feeling that it was unnecessary. That being said, there are valid reasons it was used, and I, with my stupid self, gonna explain it to you. I'm not much of a politician, but from what little I know, and I have a daughter who is a historian. A simple way to explain the act is that it was designed to increase government control in case of threats to the country. Bear that in mind. Some might not see the trucker convoy as a threat that would need this act. But let's break down things. They did threaten our economy. The blockade at Windsor and Coutts in Alberta cost Canadians millions of dollars, period. And it's also affected our automotive trade. The U.S. is looking for a reason not to buy Canadian-made automotive parts. And this blockade gave them ammunition to encourage the idea they don't need Canadian-made parts. I hope you all understand what I'm saying here. Eh? The founders of this convoy, by the way, not truckers themselves, have strong ties to white supremacy. You see the one that just lock up, the RCMP just lock up Friday? Check his, what they call it, thing on Google. Go check him, all right? And you'll see. White supremacy movements and anyone in the U.S., Europe, and Canadian security will tell you that right-wing white supremacy movements are a massive threat to Democrats. Hello? Anybody remember January the 6th? Quite frankly, the idea of wanting to be oppressed seems to fuel these people. So if they truly want to be oppressed, we can treat them just like our indigenous peoples. You have to wonder what the reaction of various governments and policy would have been made, would have had the makeup of these so-called protesters being a shade darker. Like what if a BLM flag was being waved? Or the Mohawk flag that was waved over Oka in 1990. Y'all remember that? Lastly, while the Nazis, symbols, Confederate flags, homophobic slurs, and other harassment seen and heard by Ottawa residents may have been done by the few, you have to ask yourself, if I went to a protest, where the Confederate flag? The flag of slave-owning losers who wish to have upheld race-based slavery was proudly being waved. Aren't I in the wrong protest? Think of that. Think of all that is being said there. At 4:30, our editor of the Community Contact and, of course, big spokesman on talk radio, big radio, talk radio here in Montreal, will be with his guests at 4:30. So I hope they will touch on these things, because everybody talking Trudeau this and Trudeau that. Trudeau did the right thing, and he could make a move until the province asked him to. And I love my French people, because here it is. Now, and you see, you all saw what was happening in Ottawa, in Quebec City. The mayor there put up roadblocks. So any truck that wanted to come into Quebec, they, of course, would have to go around the city. They would have a nice drive, you know. Anyway, I don't want to take up too much time. I didn't plan on this, but me vex. I hear my good friend Khalid dissing Trudeau on CKUT. And Khalid, really and truly, look into it. You're a lawyer and all that, but look into it. If you didn't bring that out, these so-called white supremacists would want to come here and say they want to overthrow my government. What kind of madness is that? They want us to look exactly like they want us to look exactly like the what's happening in their place, you know? You know, I was going to play this song, but let me stop you. I'm going to play this one. Listen to this young lady. Mellow sounds of saxophone, all the way from beautiful Jamaica.
If you give a little more
than you do, take. I see the man, Mr. Egbert Gay.
And if you try to fix more, then you break.
But we're going to go out in 3 minutes, so I'm just going to pull it up.
It takes the time to help a stranger in the rain. There's a place.
All right.
Like
he's waiting, sir. So we have to play the commercials. I know some of you are going to kill me because you love that song.
Faced with sickle cell anemia, the solution is in our blood. It's a matter of genetics. The more people from the Black communities who give blood, the better our chances to find compatible donors to help those affected by this disease. Faced with sickle cell anemia, we can't leave anyone behind. We have to donate. So don't wait. Book an appointment today at hemequebec.qc.ca, because giving is in our blood.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Good. Great. Not bad at all.
Okay. Tickety-boo. Fine, thanks.
All good. It's going gangbusters. Just great. When people ask us how we're doing, we often say fine, even if it's not always the case. If you aren't fine, say something. To get help, call Info Sociale 811, because talking is the first step towards getting better. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Productions Nuit d'Afrique and TD Bank Group are proud to present The New Faces of Afro Jazz, a special evening of concerts offering us a musical journey to Cuba, Ivory Coast, and Guadeloupe with Deme Arosena, Donald Dogbo, and Toby Young. Broadcast live on the Nuit d'Afrique Facebook page Thursday, February 24th at 8 p.m. More info at productionsnuitdafrique.com.
Once again, a pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal. It's now 4:30 on the dot, and I want to just move over and let me get rid of this music, because it doesn't want to leave. It says, the music is saying Egbert is coming in with some handsome and a beautiful lady, so the music wants to play, but I stopped it. I want to say hello to Mr. Egbert Gay. He's a... big time editor with the Community Contact. Now he's there with his guests, and we're going to hear what he has to say. In case you're wondering, Drew is in the background and he will be pushing the buttons for the Zoom. Get on the Zoom. Go tell your friends. 801-684-8199 is the connection, and passcode is capital CKUT 90.3 FM. No, CKUT. Nothing after, capital letters. I'm so eager to pass this thing off to Egbert. I'm making all kind of mistakes. Mr. Gay.
How you doing, Mr. Stretch?
I'm doing very well, thank you, sir. The load is off and it's on.
Well, you know what? Keep the load on for a little bit.
No.
Here's the deal. We are in the presence of three of Montreal's most powerful individuals.
Right.
And they are that, and they represent our community, like, absolutely well.
Yes.
So I think all your listeners, I think all Montrealers should feel really, really good having an opportunity to hear from Rowan Higgins, Ben's Telemach, and certainly Mr. David Shelton. Rowan Higgins is like a spoken word artist. She's an educator, counselor. She's been in the community for quite a while. She looks quite young if you were to see her. But she's been doing that community work for so long. And she has made an impact on so many kids' lives. It's just so amazing that she can be that as an educator, as a counselor also, and also as a spoken word artist. Some of us might know her as Blue River. Words that make you twilt and turn, and it's just amazing. But we also have Spence Telemach. Spence is like an amazing young guy. He's one of the basis now at Union United Church, which we know is one of the oldest black congregations in Montreal. Right. But Spence also goes beyond that in being a motivational speaker, and not only a motivational speaker, but a guy who can just turn people around with his words. He has a workshop and a sort of conference that he runs now that's called Broken Crayons Still Color. And it is something that is so meaningful that certainly schools and community groups can get in touch with Spence as an author, as a community builder, we can call him, but also as a strong, strong motivator of young people.
Right.
And then we, last and certainly not least, among the illustrious group of people that we have here, is Mr. David Shelton.
Yes.
Look at him. Young guy.
I've heard that name before.
Beautiful,
yes.
David Shelton. He's retired. 30-something years as a firefighter. But not only that, David, like, I know David for quite a while doing, you know, this community contact business. But David was one of the first guy who came in here as an EMT? I think it's an EMT, eh? That's what it's called.
Yeah, is emergency it an EMT, medical David? Technician. Yeah, or first responder would be more appropriate.
First responder, that I think would be the better thing. David trained most of the firefighters here in introducing that first responder. Look at him. The guy is such a good-looking guy. But look, the basis of David's story is this, and I'm certainly going to give him an opportunity to talk a little bit about that, is that he came here out of Detroit, learned French, applied to 100 fire... He wanted to be a fireman. Applied to a million little places, turned down over and over and over. He kept learning and kept applying. Became one of Montreal's first black firefighters.
Imagine that.
It's just like the stories are just amazing. So you know what? Let's start with Rowan. And Rowan, tell us a little bit about you and the work that you do, and, you know, how you've impacted on people's lives going along the way in your work and in your as an artist.
Oh, well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. So as you've already said, yes, I'm an educator for 22 years with the EMSB. I've worked in front lines of rehabilitation centers for youth and in the community. Most of the Black community organizations that no longer exist, unfortunately, but at least I could say CDNBCA is still running strong. Yes, yes. So starting from an animator to being an educator, it's been amazing. and last couple of years diving into coaching and more public speaking when it comes to empowering youth. And of course, I love having empowerment events. As you know, Egbert, I've done the lineup Grooming for Greatness, where young men are meeting older men and they are actually diving into looking at different areas of their lives where they can grow. So passing on the baton, especially when we've had organizations, whether it's Big Brothers or Black Star and all these things that don't exist, and how we can connect them. Because some people say, oh, we don't have good mentors. I'm like, I have them all around me. What's happening? So why not be the bridge? And having women events called like a Shift, where it's a woman's soul revival and where they can actually have conversations on the issues and the areas of where they've overcome, but they can share that with other young ladies that they can hear that they can be victorious as well. And on that note, whether it's as a spoken word artist, an educator, a community advocate, it's about culture for me, culture literacy, community well-being, and creative literacy.
You know, and one of the things that we have to come to terms with is the fact that Rowan has been one of the young ones who've been coming up after that old leadership of the 90s. And Rowan has just sort of morphed into this whole thing. And like I said, she's taken the torch above and beyond. Amazing, amazing work that she's done. She's a Jamaican girl too, you know. Don't mind how she's talking all pretty up there, kind of pretty language. She is a Jamaican girl. Sven is from Florida. He spent a couple of years in Florida, so he has this little American thing. So I think we're surrounded by American people today. Sven is originally a Montrealer, and Sven would tell his story of one of challenges and obstacles. But today, as one of the junior leaders of one of our oldest Black congregations, and a strong, strong, strong motivator, you know, just connecting the dots with your pain, your purpose, and your power. That's part of his workshop that he offers, Broken Crayons, you know, Still Color. So, Sven, tell us a little bit about the work that you do, and, you know, a little bit about that thing that you're doing down at Union United Church. You should unmute. Not hearing.
They have to unmute him.
Yeah, I think Drew has to unmute him. Okay, we'll get back to Sven in 2 minutes. I sort of think we're going to talk a little bit to David. And David, Mr. David Shelton, out of Detroit, one of those guys who came in and been an inspiration to so many people, Black, white, man, woman. David, talk a little bit about yourself and, you know, breaking some of the barriers that you have broken.
Hello, Egbert. Thank you so much for having me on. Yes, I've been here. I've been here since about 1990. I was on the Detroit Fire Department before I found this wonderful town and the wonderful people in it. Fell in love with the place on my first visit, and a group of people, and a wonderful woman as well. And I courted her for a couple of years, and I decided to go on and make the move. I had already, you know, I had a bit of a head start in the sense that I really wanted to learn this language. I really wanted to be, when I moved here, I knew that was going to be a part of my thing. I wanted to live in a place like this, a cosmopolitan city, really dynamic, like the New York City that I knew in my youth, but in French. And so this was the perfect fit for me. And I was so happy to find it and to meet all the wonderful people I met. And then I moved up here for a job that was offered to me after, as you said, I started making applications. I passed out over 100 CVs in my time trying to get this job. I had been accepted for a job, but then when they met me, they decided they didn't want me. And that was a bit of a shock. The guy who had invited me was vetoed by his boss, and they put somebody else in the spot. It took me almost 2 years to get another job. And so that's where all of that passing out the CVs, every time I took another course, I added it to my CV, I changed the font, I went back to all the same places I had been to before, knocked on doors, shook hands, you know, did everything I could to try to get an interview, get a shot at it. And then In 92, I got that shot in Pointe Claire, back before the municipal merger, that is, obviously. And so I got hired at the city of Pointe Claire, and it was a great experience. And then 12 years later, the municipal merger allowed me to move downtown. And so I came downtown. I lived downtown. I live in Little Burgundy. And so I was working right around the corner from home on St. Matthew and De Maisonneuve. And so, it was wonderful. That would have been the first fire station I ever visited in Canada. And then for the part, like you said, of the first responder. Now, I appreciate you, Egg, but thank you for throwing all those compliments, man. But I don't deserve all that credit. We were 20 instructors. Because previously there were eight, when there were 29 cities on the island, eight of them did first responder. When the merger happened, they had to keep delivering that service because you can't take away a service, emergency service once it's been given. And so it was just a matter of time before it spread to the whole island. And so that was another place where I worked super hard to get in the first responder division, because I knew they would need help. So I just kept writing letters and finally got in. And so we harmonized those eight stations. And then we went on to make an internal group of instructors that offered clinical coaching. Now, the training was given by Urgence Santé, though we gave the updates and the mise à jour and the continuing education. And we offered clinical coaching for 3.5 years' time on the ground. When a fire truck went to a first responder call, we went and supported them, offered them whatever advice they needed, or took over if it was a super difficult call that was beyond their ability or their comfort level. That went on, and then we went on from there. Then I went to our station 5, our big busiest station in Canada, on Ontario, right around, for people who remember the Jell-O bar, right up the street from the Jell-O bar on Ontario, and stayed there for 10 years, climbed the ranks, lieutenant, acting lieutenant, acting captain, and then chief. And I retired a couple of weeks ago as battalion chief. Thank you. Not so much. Now, we have been working on diversity issues, as you said, Egbert, for a long time. And we did informally, we did it for a while. It got slightly more and more formal. And when I left, I stayed on a little bit longer, actually, to help establish the very first Bureau of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion of the Montreal Fire Department. So we're hoping that we'll get even more resources and be able to do more in that regard.
Right. And you are continuing to work on diversity even in your retirement, right?
Yes, I am. I'm with, there's a very interesting organization. It's called the Réseau d'Action des Employés Noirs de la Ville de Montréal. So that's the action network for Black employees of the city of Montreal. And I'm still, as a retiree, I'm still working with them. We have an event, on the 23rd coming up for Devin Cirque je fais. At the city, there are over 300 jobs, 300 job titles. And so we're trying to encourage everybody to become young people and not so young people who are interested in jobs at the city to consider it and look into it. It was a great employer for me for all those years. And there's a lot of things, a lot of ways for people to find something that might suit them at the city.
Amazing. All right. David, we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to get some of your thoughts on some of the issues that face the community, because you haven't even touched on your community work part yet. So we're going to get to that. Let's hear from Sven Telemach. Sven, like I said, is a young spiritual leader down at Union United Church, but he's also a motivator, writer, author. He is just like one of the things that this community should be proud of, because he left Montreal under difficult circumstances, went to Florida, left Florida under the most difficult situations, came back to Montreal and established somewhat of a force. Talk a little bit about what you do and who you are, Sven.
Well, Egbert, before I even do that, Mr. Gay, I have to just tell you thank you for having me on this platform. And I actually have to thank the co-panelists here, because both of them have impacted me directly. When you call me author, the first person to help me write my book, the first person to help me speak, you're looking at Blue River, Rose Higgins, which is like my partner in crime, you know. And when it comes to Mr. Shelton, some people don't know, but I actually attempted to become a firefighter here in Montreal. And he was one of the people that were motivating me, and a product of his work, which is Alberto Sillon, which is, you know, having the same work, trying to get more diversity into the community, was one of the other people that tried to help me out in that process. When it comes to the work that I'm doing at Union right now, I'm the outreach coordinator. Right now, because of what's going on at Union, my position is very flexible. You know, I might be here helping with a Bible study, or I might be here working with the food bank or a seniors program. On another level, like you mentioned, me being a speaker, I do have a tour called Broken Crayon, Still Color. And the main focus behind that is to get youth to understand that regardless of the adversity they may have come across, whether that be adversity at home, whether that be adversity in school, adversity in their environment, regardless of the different things that happen to us, we may be broken, but we still can color. We can still do great things. Even when we feel broken, even when we feel useless, we can use that to color. And I feel like every single person here, including yourself, Mr. Gay, can attest to coloring, you know, coloring this community, you know, becoming a voice. You yourself, Mr. Gay, what you've done with the community contact and all of the other stuff that we don't know about, because I find you're constantly putting everybody else in the forefront. You know, I got to turn that light right back to you, but that's pretty much my thing. I'm involved with, just like my co-panelists here, with several different organizations, with several different things. And what I could say is we all have one thing in common. We're focused on getting our community to be a better place.
Right. You know, one of the things that that drives me, and I could even add Stretch Howard Carr to this, is that we are driven by young people, by that young energy that tends to, you know, that tends to fuel the community forward. And, you know, community contact, the nicest thing about community contact is like having someone like Maya Johnson, when she was like 17 years old, show up there all awkward and ready, and you know, and you go to CBC and you could today find at least 6 or 7 people who had community contact done at CBC. And that's what fuels our community. So really, you know, Stretch, I, David, we are at a little higher age group demographic, but I think it's, you know, it really is you and Rowan who has that responsibility to push things forward. I want to talk a little bit about the community post-pandemic. We've had a pretty tough pandemic. A lot of people were not into the vaccination thing. A lot of people were challenging some of the restrictions and all the other things. But the pandemic is, we're going to have to live with it at some point. And our community have to figure out our place in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. We have to figure out. We have a tough place to be. Black community, we are Black English-speaking people to a certain extent. So we have to figure it out. What's going to happen with, what should we expect out of the organizations that are still, we have lost so many of them. Union United Church, the oldest Black congregation, is at a precarious kind of situation right now. David has been working hard in trying to get the NCC back reestablished, and he's been bawling me out for writing bad things about them once in a while. So what's going to happen as we come out of the pandemic? How are we going to figure this out? What is the responsibility of the organizations, the people that are in place to help us going forward? Go and start. Tell us what
you I knew you were coming for me.
I had to come at you. What could I do?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Go.
Well, I'll say, you know what? The most important thing, I mean, we got to look at first the areas of concerns that we had during the pandemic. Yes, prior to, but especially, it was food insecurity. We have, especially being educated in the school, there are so many children that I wouldn't just say thrive, but they depend on the breakfast and the lunch programs. And now they're home, right? And there might be food insecurity already. And now with the pandemic, with job losses and stressed out parents and parents that may not be able to be present because they're on the front line as essential workers, there's a lot of people that may have the money, but they don't have the skill set to even prepare food or what to buy. And it may be junk. So a lot of our kids, that was a struggle. And then we have kids where school is their sanctuary, is where they get to claim sanctuary because they're more safe outside of their home. So with the domestic violence going, you know, it's rising, or witnessing domestic violence between couples, this was my concern. And so when I look at the needs now, is we've seen the rise of suicide, especially in Black men. We've seen the rise of mental health, that issue. I'm now a leader of LaSalle New Life, a community service leader of a food bank and different services. The elderly, I mean, we're speaking about issues where even where the government, everything is online now and people don't have access to, right, or don't have the skill set to use online services. How do they get certain things printed out just to go to the doctors? So for me, it's instilling the skills that people need in order to sustain themselves and not just be in survival mode, not just to survive, but to thrive. Right. So definitely mental health, mm-hmm, and as a community to come together. This is nothing new. I know we've spoken about this before, but instead of us as community organizations and institutions acting as silos, collaborate, come together, be a bridge for the community, regardless of what sector is our mandate, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's for me, most important thing is to just see what those
Sven is in the middle of this thing, right? Every day, every week, Sven is handing out bags and baskets of food. Sven recently sent more than $10,000 worth of food to Haiti, right? You were able to raise that thing, barrels of goods and well-being stuff to send to Haiti. So Sven is in the middle. You see it almost every week. How are we looking? How are we positioned for the future, this post-pandemic future?
Well, two things. First, what we got together was not necessarily food. Yes, the food bank was about the food, but the barrels that we sent to Haiti were medical supplies,
right,
and sanitary supplies. But you are right, you know, within a year we give actually more than 10,000 bags of food here at Union United Church. And for me, I see so many different issues. The first issue, there was food insecurity before the pandemic. The situation got worse. And now, right now, prices of food have actually gone up. So that there's another problem there. But one of the other issues that I have specifically is, like you said, the oldest Black congregation in Quebec is Union United Church. I may be wrong, but I think it's the oldest Black institution as well. But now, what about those older people? Another issue that we're facing is a lot of social isolation.
That's right.
Because this church served as a wonderful place for people that were older, seniors, 60s, 70s, you know, 80s, to connect together, share their experiences. This was a home to so many different people, especially in the Black English community, because most of the people that would come to this church no longer are in Burgundy. They're everywhere. So now the challenge is, now everyone is in their homes. So for me, one of the challenges that we have is to break social isolation, mm-hmm, you know, to break that, to get people to connect on Zoom, to use Zoom to the maximum capacity that we can. So far we've done an exercise program online. You know, we've created Bible studies online for men and women. We have a writing therapy, you know, that we've connected with. Rowan is involved with that, as well as Dr. Lisa Ninjuru, you know, and we've tried all of these different ways to connect seniors online so they do not feel alone, you know. And when it comes to our Sunday services, getting our services, our Sunday services online, right now, sometimes we have sometimes up to 200 people. Whether they're online on Zoom, whether they're, you know, over the phone, applying for different grants, we've been able to get a lot of seniors tablets, people that didn't have tablets before, now they have tablets so they can get online. But I feel like our number one challenge for me, I say, is social isolation, mm-hmm. and reintegrating people to be comfortable because of the fear. There's been so much fear pushed on seniors about this pandemic that some of them, you know, now they feel so iffy just to congregate. And it's to slowly getting them comfortable with reason, you know, with reason, but to slowly getting them comfortable to congregate so we can share the most important thing that we have, which is us.
Right. One of the things, I want to move it away a little bit and bring it to David, who's been working a little bit on revitalizing or recouping almost one of the another of the oldest institutions that we've had here in our community, the Negro Community Center. David had or has a real big vision, because somewhere along the line, we're going to need institutions to drive us forward. We're going to need individuals to grow and to become strong and to become better at what they do. But we're going to need that binding thing that institutions bring. David, you had a real big thing in mind for the NCC. Talk a little bit about that. Is that still in play? Can it happen?
He's muted.
You're not hearing me?
He's muted.
Are you muted?
And so Sven.
True, you got to unmute, David.
And Sven.
And Sven. You can mute me. We got you, David? No, not yet? Yeah, because David has been serving as the chairman of the NCC for quite a while. And, you know, he has plans, because we're going to need, like I said, we need institutions. And this is a cornerstone institution. Talk a little bit, Dave.
All right. Thank you so much, Egbert. And I'm so glad you came around to this subject. You know, I have to take my hat off to Rowan and Sven for the tremendous work they're doing. Charlene and all the community workers who have been offering, you know, this tremendous support to our elders and our communities during this pandemic. Now, as you say, coming out of the pandemic, you know, we're going to have another transition to make, because as Sven's alluded to, I think people are a little shy now, are going to be, you know, worried and apprehensive about getting back together. And we're going to have to start this thing back up in person. You know, it's going to take some effort. But specifically about the NCC, one thing, yes, we've been working for 2 years since 2020, that horrible summer of 2020. Just prior to that, there was some activity around the site of the former NCC. And so a group of us in the community came together, and we named our movement Revive NCC. If you come see us on Facebook, it's the NCC with the capital C's. Come see us at revivencc.org. Yes, we have big plans. We have a lot of things that we would like to do in terms of getting the programming back up, accessing our archives, which are housed at Concordia University, making those things available to the community, as well as putting together some exhibits online and then later in person. So those are the three major spheres of what we want to do, or programs for our community, the exhibitions, and then eventually as well venues. So we still have a tremendous amount of work to do, but we're quite excited. Now, you asked about what we're going to do going forward, and I have to say, I would like to send a shout out to Group 3737 and to the federal government for this Supporting Black Canadian Communities initiative that you have probably written about and I'm surely well aware of. This group of practice, I think, is fantastic that, you know, several organizations on the English side and on the also on the French side, and all of us together, we've come together with these grants from the federal government to help us be better managed organizations and to help us work together, to Rowan's point, to help us hopefully not work in silos going forward. So I'm feeling quite encouraged about the post-pandemic future for Black Montrealers and as well as on the English side and the French side. Our organization should be getting stronger. And I want to urge all of our listeners and members of our community to be active in your community. Choose your organization. Obviously, Rowan and Sven's have great things going on. Lots of other organizations are going. We could certainly use your help at Revive NCC. Find a way to get involved. We have every reason to work to build our community, to overcome the problems that we have. And we all know that our society is full of problems, but we need to remember that there are less obstacles to us in this society than there have ever been in the past.
Absolutely.
So we have every reason to go full speed forward in our efforts to correct the record, to correct the educational curriculum, to fight for greater social justice, to organize in these different spheres, and to work together. And so that's where
the things that I look at now is, am I muted? Am I good? No?
Yes, I hear you.
You hear me? All right. So one of the things that we're looking at forward, and you're so right about that. I mean, a lot of work have been done at the community organizing level to break down barriers and remove obstacles. We can't lose sight of the fact that Canada is at a crossroads. North America is at a crossroad in terms of